This is a download from the Scottish Railway Preservation Society.
Just putting some lights on the engine now. We've got two lights showing it's a passenger train.
This is Soundbox, a magazine for railway enthusiasts around the world, coming to you from Bowness in Scotland.
Hello, and welcome to the very first edition of Soundblast, the Scottish Railway Preservation Society's iPod, the totally non-visual magazine. I'm Sandy Simpson. I've been a member of the SRPS, the Scottish Railway Preservation Society, for quite a number of years, and having done a variety of jobs during these years, I'm nowadays content to be one of the signalmen on the Bowness and Kinneil Railway, the operating arm of the SRPS. We're in the signal box at Bowness today. That's the clock you hear ticking in the background, and this is a diesel galaday when there's a lot going on. There's a lot to come in this edition of Sound Blast 2 when, among other goodies, you'll be able to test your knowledge of railway operating procedures. Join David, by the way, behind the scenes at today's Diesel Gala, hear Donald McLeish describe the rescue of a redundant semaphore signal, and visit Mike Rudelluck's archive of steam locomotive recordings. We start with Mike Rudelluck. No, not his archive recordings right now, they'll come later on in the programme. But with a look back to April 9th this year, that's 2010, when the extension of the Bowness and Kinneil Railway to manual was officially opened, completing a task begun in 1979. Mike.
I had a bird's eye view of the opening of the extension to manual from my vantage point on the small road bridge just beside Buck Hill Station. There were crowds of people on the platform. And then on a signal, Murray Shire, the former LNER loco, drove through a ribbon stretched over the track to signify the opening of the extension. This is not the first opening ceremony at Burke Hill. In 1989, the line was opened from Bowness. The new Burke Hill station was handed over to the Society by Charles Snedden, convener of what was then Central Regional Council. He told the guests about the station's unusual past.
As many of you will already know, was originally located in Monifieth. The building was rather dilapidated, but ScotRail did decide to give this free or gratis to the SRPS. The Regional Council at that particular time were looking for a theme for the exhibit at Glasgow Garden Festival. They chose a heritage theme, and what better centrepiece could we have had than this rather pleasing and quite magnificent building. So from that day on, the building has been restored, sectionalised. It's been in Glasgow, it's had 3 million visitors approximately. It's been featured in every corner of the world, and now it's located resting in Burke Hill, where we hope that perhaps we won't run into the millions, but we hope that thousands and tens of thousands will come back and renew acquaintance with this building and with this exciting project.
But why did it take almost 30 years to complete the job and get the passenger trains running up to Manual, where the branch joins the main line? James Robertson, the Society's immediate past chairman, was project leader on the final section.
If I needed a project when I retired 8 years ago, this was certainly it. And I guess at the time, like all things, I just didn't know quite how much work actually laid ahead. So having volunteered as project manager, we started with two of us, name of David Heath, and slowly built up to a regular weekly Monday squad. Now at that time we were known as the 57 squad, which was something to do with age, and now we're known as the 64 squad. So before anyone takes offence, I'd like to say this is a rough average and it doesn't apply to any individual member. You may wonder why it took us quite so long to do it, but the reason was we actually worked on the line back down to Bowness at the same time, and we did a lot of work in the yard. So as well as pushing up to manual, we actually did a lot of improvement on the infrastructure back down to the station at Bowness.
David Morgan, chairman of the Heritage Railway Association, the umbrella organisation for historic railways in Britain, had warm praise for the Society's efforts.
I'd just like to really add my congratulations and all the railway heritage sector to the fantastic job you've done here in extending to Manuel. I think it goes without saying that I regard this as a major milestone in heritage railway development. We've seen quite a few recently, but this is really in the top league.
Then it was time for the guests to rejoin the train and complete the trip to Manuel. It was the first time in more than 50 years that a passenger train had run over the complete line. The new section took passengers over the picturesque Avon Viaduct and then on under the motorway and old road bridge to reach open country. It took 5 years to complete the project. The work was carried out by the Monday Squad, a group of volunteers who provided the muscle power.
I'm Ian Anderson. I've worked in the manual section for about 3 years up to the point it was opened. I was always interested in railways, and shortly before I retired, I decided to come out and volunteer at Bowness. I used to be in civil engineering, and that's why I chose the Permanent Way Squad. And that's where I basically have been working for the past 4 years. When we first came out, of course, there was a lot of work to be done in the line, and that's I was also not just working on the heavier work of sleeper replacing and railing, but was also involved in doing drawings and other bits and pieces for the society, which had more a building or civil engineering line. Although I hadn't done the work for about 20 odd years, I still had the skills of doing drawings, so I was always picked for these things when they appeared.
Hi, I'm Ian Ross. I only come here because I'm unemployed, need something to do on a Monday. It keeps me occupied and gives me job experience.
Peter Cookson, I started coming a couple of years ago. I've been a member for 30 odd years and never come until I semi-retired and got involved and changed saw and spraying as well, so I'm able to do some of that as well.
I'm Bob Lockhart. I've been a volunteer for perhaps 5 years, although I've been a member of the society for a lot longer than that. I've been a member of the Monday Squad since I first came to the railway as a volunteer, and have been heavily involved in the upgrading of the line between Burke Hill and Manuel for the extension, which happily is now open. It was interesting, sometimes difficult, always fun. I do remember the track bed being underwater after heavy rain on one occasion. But it's very satisfying to be part of the progress that the railway is obviously making.
I'm Alec Forrest. I'm a member of the Monday Squad. I recall being asked by James to come out for a couple of days to clear some of the shrubbery away from the line. That was 4 years ago, and I'm still here yet. A great way to spend a day. The company's fine, and we really are learning quite a lot. And with satisfaction in what we've completed, the line to Manuel.
Back at Bowness, I met two men who played key roles in bringing the Scottish Railway Preservation Society to Bowness in 1979. Frank Bracewell was then Director of Planning for Central Regional Council. He gave full backing to the ambitious scheme.
Well, the central region thought that Bowness was a very attractive community, a village. It had a lot of very interesting features. It was in a lovely location. It was on the river, etc. And we thought that we should try to make the best of it, in it with its own character, without changing it in any way. It was worthy of cherishing and conserving and enhancing that, rather than starting to try and change it radically. And we recognised that the things that were strongest about it, what was the river location and the fact that it had a railway group of enthusiasts who were prepared to do something to cherish the railway heritage. And that seemed to be well worth supporting, so we supported you.
Greg Beecroft, who is with the British Railways Property Board, sold the old Bowness branch to the Society. But what was their reaction when the Society approached them with a view to buying the line in the first place?
Well, this was something that we were used to because we dealt with railway preservation societies before. We were prepared to sell them lines intact. From BR's point of view, it was a good deal. You got disposed of an entire railway line rather than having to split it all up. There were just a load of issues. Of course, they had to get a statutory order to take over the powers to operate and maintain a railway. They had to raise the funds to buy the track. We were not too concerned about the value of the land, because from BR's point of view, well, we wouldn't have to maintain a listed viaduct anymore, and that was an advantage to us. So I think it was generally positive. I mean, you've got to remember that there were a lot of people within BR who were sympathetic to the views of the aspirations of the SRPS. I mean, many people who work for the Scottish region were SRPS members. An awful lot of things got discussed over lunch in the staff canteen at Buchanan House. So it was all quite positive, and I think people wanted to find a way around the problems that there were.
What was the biggest problem, Greg, in this relationship?
I think the problem, one of the biggest problems, was the value of the track. There was a central BR stores organisation that set the price at which track had to be sold, and you had to apply it. Furthermore, if there was delay in buying the land, which there was, waiting for the statutory order to come through, they expected the society to pay interest on the value of the track, because they took the view that it would all get lifted and get taken away. I think we got helped a bit by the recession, which reduced the value of scrap metal, so that there wasn't quite the urgency, and we got round it somehow.
Do you think these aspirations have been successful?
Oh, incredibly so. I haven't been here for some years until today, and I'm absolutely astonished. You've grown immeasurably without, far beyond recognition of anything that we thought might transpire. I think it really is a miracle. And it, to be done by a volunteer organisation, I think it should go down in the record. I've never in my whole long period of working ever seen anything like the achievement that you as a group have achieved. It's been wonderful.
I think that what is so good about Bowness, it doesn't just provide, you know, a ride up and down in a steam train, but with the museum, it demonstrates the importance of the railways to Scotland and to, you know, the country as a whole. The railways completely changed the way in which people lived and worked, and also here you're reproducing something that's now outside the experience of many people alive today. It is a historic recreation of something that's now lost.
That report was by Mike Udellock, who will be back later to share some of his archive recordings of steam locomotives with us. And speaking about sharing, did you know that 2011 will mark the 50th anniversary of the founding of the SRPS? We're all invited to share the celebrations at the 50th anniversary dinner in Keighley. You'll find all the details on page 4 of the autumn 2010 edition of the SRPS magazine Blastpipe. And on the very next page of that magazine, you'll find details of the 2011 calendar, an attractive and lasting present for friends, and a present that will remind them of the society and its activities every single day of the year. Now, from the future to the past, as Donald MacLeish shows off an old semaphore signal to David Byrie, who wasn't over-impressed initially.
Donald, we're in the store for the signal and telegraph department, and in front of us is this signal which you've actually saved, but frankly it looks like a heap of scrap.
It's not actually, it's a very good condition lattice signal post. Quite often there'll be a lot of rust where the lattice comes onto the angle work down at the bottom, but this one is actually very sound. It's got a double length of angle to make it stronger because it's actually a bracket. There's a small post that comes out from the side to actually carry the signal arm, and that's exactly what we need at Birkhill station platform.
Where did it come from?
It actually came from the Grangemouth branch, which goes from Grangemouth Junction down to the docks, and it was used as a backing signal for shunting down into the docks, more or less underneath where the main road goes over at Grangemouth.
What's the age of the signal?
Well, we don't know exactly, but it certainly has, I would estimate, has been there for a good 80 or 90 years. Certainly we've had an interest in it since it's become disused for about 25 or 30 years, and I've kept my eye on it all this time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how do you know these signals are there?
Well, this one was fairly obvious because you could see it from the road.
Do you go around actually keeping your eyes open for old signals and that type of thing?
Not specifically, unless I'm looking for something particular, but we had our eye on this, as I say, for 25 years or so, and we had put in for it. But because it was part of beside a working railway line, we couldn't just go in and dig it up any old time. We had to work with Network Rail and their contractors to when they would have a possession when the line was closed to normal traffic, and we could get in and take it away.
Are you pleased it's here?
Oh yeah, delighted, I say, because I was reasonably happy because it was safe enough there where it was, although it was not in use. But now that it's here, we can start to take it apart, clean it up, and get it restored ready for use.
Donald McLeish was speaking with David Bytheway. Well, as you know, we're in the signal box at Bowness, where it's puzzle time. No, it's not an oral version of Spot the Ball, or even Can You Name This Tune? There are three questions for you to think about. Can you work out what's happening here? Why does the guard blow his whistle twice? And this is for all true anoraks, can you name the loco that we hear at the end of this clip? Ears trained? Ears trained? Oh, never mind.
Okay, so the signal is now clear, so we're just going to give the signal to the rear driver. Make sure clear. Now to the front. The driver's given us the right to way, and we're now safe to proceed.
Okay, if someone will tell me what the right answers are, I'll tell you at the end of the programme. But we're going off the rails for a few minutes now, for not all of the tens of thousands of visitors who come to the Bowness and Kinneil Railway each year come to travel on the trains. In June of this year, that's 2010, more than 40 lorries and heavy goods vehicles arrived at the station for a stop on the second Gangwirlay run. This road transport rally was held in memory of Peter Drummond, a well-respected member of the Albion Club who died in January 2009. David caught up with Bill Craigie, the driver of the oldest vehicle in the rally, shortly before he and his vehicle left Bowness.
This is an Albion KL127 from 1937.
It looks quite magnificent in blue, doesn't it?
Yes.
Who actually owned it?
William Brown and Company owned it originally, and then it was restored by Andy Gibbs about 12 years ago, I believe.
Must take an awful lot of work to restore something like this.
Yes, it costs an awful lot of money. And
you going to tell me how much money?
I don't know how much it was.
What was its task when it was originally came on the road? It was a lorry, so for...
Well, it can carry up to 3 tonnes.
Mm-hmm.
It was an engineer's lorry, so they would have and founders, so they would have had metal parts carried about in it.
What's the engine like?
The engine it runs beautifully. It's a petrol engine, 4-cylinder.
Right, let's go and start it up. Let's hear it sounds. I'm just getting in now. Cab looks quite magnificent there, nice and clean. No safety belts here, no?
No seat belts.
Checking the gears. Ignition.
Got to wait for the fuel to pump up. That's it. There we go.
Okay, go and take it away.
That was Bill Craigie with his 1935 Albion lorry. I remember British Road Services using a fleet of Albion lorries in the early 1950s to carry fish overnight from Aberdeen to Billingsgate Market in London, stinking meltwater spilling from them as they turned off the Victoria Bridge and into Tay Street in Perth. Ah, lost railway traffic. Which brings us back to railway vehicles, to the collection of significant rail passenger vehicles owned by the SRPS, too many of them deteriorating in open-air storage for lack of the funds to provide covered accommodation. However, during the summer of 2010, the SRPS was awarded a grant of £160,000 to help ameliorate this situation, as James Robertson, the immediate past chairman of the Society, explained to roving reporter David Bytheway.
We're now at the east end of the yard, and as I look around, I can see carriages and wagons. There's lots of rails just lying behind me. But between the diesel shed and the carriage shed is going to be the new collection, the new building. And with me now is James Robertson. James, what's this place going to look like in a few years' time?
Well, the hope is that the whole area between the diesel shed and the carriage shed will house a new building which will cover as much of the area as possible. It may not have sidewalls because it will be provided with shelter by the adjacent buildings, and it won't have ends, but it will have a roof right over it, so it will protect everything in there from the elements.
Now, what sort of vehicles are going to be protected?
Well, the strongest candidates are the electrical multiple unit and the diesel multiple unit. And I think perhaps what the big crane from Haymarket may also go in there, but that's still to be decided.
These are open to the elements, aren't they? These are getting fairly battered by the weather at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, so all these things are stored outside, as are many of our wagons and older carriages. So hopefully this will provide an opportunity to put the most interesting examples which are most deserving of preservation undercover.
How much is this project costing?
Well, the budget for the project is £200,000, and we've been successful in getting this grant of £160,000 from Museum and Gallery Scotland, so we've got a shortfall of £40,000 to make up ourselves.
How will we do that? How will we raise that money?
Well, there'll be an appeal, and that'll be put out through Blastpipe, and I guess at the end of the day the Society will just have to make up any money that we don't manage to raise, but let's hope the appeal is successful.
And how soon before we see this building?
It's a condition also of the grant that the whole project is completed within a year, so we certainly don't have long to hang about.
James Robertson was speaking earlier, but we're back in the signal box now with the September Diesel Gala in full swing. As I think you can hear, I can see one Class 37 approaching the signal box, and there's another one which is growling away just to the east of the box. Oh, there we are. Well, our railway reporter David went over to join Andrew Harper a little while ago, and we'll go over now live to speak with Andrew. Andrew Harper?
I'm Andrew Harper, one of the organisers of the Diesel Weekend today at the Bowness and Kinneil Railway. We're just waiting on one of our trains coming back, which is just taking people up the line, and then we're going to be heading off very shortly in our restored DMU. It's one of the first times it's actually been used for carrying passengers, and we think it's going to be a very popular attraction. It's one of the vehicles where you can sit behind the driver and look out and see where you're going. People always like that sort of thing. We're just about ready to go. This is one of the days when we try and demonstrate our really quite good collection of diesel locomotives and other units they've got here on the site at Bowness. It's really perhaps one of these curious accidents of history that we've ended up having a much better collection of diesel vehicles than we have of steam engines. And to my mind, they're superior anyway. They're still going, there's still plenty of them about. But the older ones are genuinely disappearing, and we think they're worthy of preservation.
Hi, my name's Howard Miller, and I'm the driver of today's train. This is a Class 126 Swindon set. We're just about to leave the station. The sequence for taking this train out of the station, this is slightly unusual in that it's got gears, which is quite unlike any other train. So in order to move away, we simply have to press this, which you'll hear, which is the dead man's handle. We then put the train into first gear and simply open the throttle, and away we go.
John Horn.
I am currently enjoying travelling in the saloon of a Class 126 intercity diesel multiple unit. I have been heavily involved in its restoration since it was purchased from British Rail in 1984. It's particularly satisfying for me to see it almost fully complete inside now, because it was once an empty shell after extensive asbestos removal works and full restoration of the bodywork of the power cars, and having to completely fit out the insides of all the vehicles to the original standard and design.
What was the most hardest job to do? What was the most difficult job?
Well, a lot of the difficult jobs were to do with finding out what the original colour, size, shape of things were. A lot of the drawings we had to purchase from our railway offices down south. That gave us the specifications and the dimensions of various components and fittings. We also just the job was much more time consuming and arduous than we imagined when we inherited the coach again from after asbestos removal. We made the ridiculous estimate it would only take a short space of time for us to fit out the vehicles, and it's proven to take many times longer than that. Also there's just a very small band of us been working on it, although it was the main restoration was held with the granting of the lottery money from HLF, and also outsourcing a certain amount of work to the Midland Railway Engineering in Butterley.
How much did it cost to restore?
I can't remember the exact figure, but all in it was over £300,000 was the value of the project. But I believe that also included a cash equivalent for volunteer effort as well.
Do you think it's worth it?
Oh yes, it certainly was. It's very priceless, almost really. It's fantastic just to see it back restored again, and hopefully it'll see regular use on the railway now.
What was its job in its working day?
Well, it was actually built in 1959 for services out of Glasgow going down to Ayr, Given and Stranraer. That was the main function that it was built for. It was built to the same, basically the same specification as a billet's made 3 years earlier for Glasgow to Edinburgh services. There were some slight improvements made inside.
What was its lifespan? When did it run?
Well, the last of them were withdrawn in 1983, so they didn't actually have a hugely long life in British Rail. They've now been in preservation longer than they were in British Rail.
Hello, I'm Stuart Seller. I'm the responsible officer today for the Saturday of the diesel weekend. The main duties of the responsible officer are to ensure that the roster we put together and the timetable we put together all run smoothly in the day, and that all the crews know what they're doing, and that any problems that arise in the day are dealt with. Today's been quite good, everything's went to plan. I'd made a couple of swaps with the crews just to keep things right, and everything's going quite smoothly, quite pleased with it all. We've had over 500 passengers so far. We've run a more intense timetable than we have done in the past, up to manual, and tomorrow's going to be much the same.
My name is Peter Duff. I'm a member of the diesel group. My supposed preference for diesels as against steam is that you have almost instant power available with the diesel, whereas steam takes obviously much longer. So here we have two Class 37s working in tandem with each other, which will give a great deal of power for climb up the hill towards Manor.
Hi there, I'm Ken Henderson. I'm a visitor to the railway today. I'm here primarily steam engineer myself, primarily steam enthusiast, but as the years go on, the historic diesel traction is now becoming historic in its own right, so it's good that you people come along and actually enjoy what we still have today in the way of preserved diesel locomotives as well.
My name is Kevin Shaw, and I'm primarily as well, I'm a steam enthusiast, but I've just come for the day to the railway because of the Class 37s mainly, because that's what I remember when I was younger and when I travelled on the railways, and I'm just a big fan of those.
I was trying to get a perfect shot as well.
Okay, well, you're leaning out the
at the window here trying to get the Class 37. Yeah. What's so important about the Class 37?
The reason, I think it's the power. The power, the noise. I like the features, like the nose ends.
And you going to get your picture there?
Oh, it's not coming down yet. It's stopped again. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, I think this will be like a fantastic shot as well. Yep, got it.
Good afternoon, it's, I'm Alistair Proudfoot here. I'm showing you around the diesel shed today and the yard. Just to say we're out in the diesel shed, this locomotive 37403, as you can tell, is under major restoration. The engine is currently out of the locomotive, which is getting overhauled in another part of the building. Also in the shed we have 37175, which again has been restored cosmetically, paint job, and is now getting its engine rebuilt after having a few problems. Also in the diesel shed we have the 08 shunter, 08443, which is under restoration as well and is now painted in the green livery for the Thomas weekend. Also in the diesel shed, as you can see, we've been doing a lot of work on the new stores area, and that so we'll have better sort of stock levels and we know where everything is, etc. And also we've got bogies here on the pit for our locomotives that are also under restoration.
Hello, I'm Rachel Drummond. I'm a member of the SRPS diesel group. From a young age, I've always had an interest in diesel traction, and that was all thanks to my grandfather. When we used to sort of like cab ride up to Oban from Gearloch Head in his friend's Type 2. And ever since then, I've been hooked. I'm the only female member that I've seen so far that regularly comes out, but I know there's a few females in the steam group. But the diesel guys do. They treat me very well. No preferential treatment, though. I've still got to do all the heavy, dirty jobs just like anybody else.
We really should pre-record these sequences. And speaking of recordings, I promised that Mike Rudelock would let us hear some sound recordings from his own personal collection, made during the 1960s when steam locomotives were still in everyday service on the big railway, although the hiss of steam was giving way to the growl of diesel.
Well, I've come to Stirling, to the house of Mike Rudelock, to listen to some of his sound recordings. Now, you've been making recordings, Mike, over the last 50 years. Why is it you chose to record sounds of the trains when other people were busy photographing them?
It kept alive something else that was a bit different to the normal photographer. And you could only do stills photographs in those days. Cinefilm was quite expensive, and this was before the days of video. So I was recording something special for myself that I could enjoy for years to come.
So what sort of equipment did you have?
It was one of the first Philips cassette recorders. Pre that, it was reel-to-reel. So this is more compact, easier to use.
Do I remember seeing you on a reel tour with apparatus which looked as if it came from a science lab?
Yes, these were the clamps I used to hold the microphone at the quarter-light windows in the coach.
Didn't mind you taking it from the science lab?
Oh, I got a gift. They said too many. We like some. Yes, certainly.
What about wind? That's always a big enemy, isn't it, of the sound recordist?
That and background noise, yes, but particularly wind. And so I used a layer of foam around the microphone.
Okay, you've got a collection here. Now, how many recordings do you think you've got?
Oh, in the box here, we've got about 30 different cassettes. Some of them hour cassettes, some of them hour and a half cassettes.
Okay. So you've chosen one. What are we going to start off with?
Well, let's start off with Black 5 on a parcel train at Stirling. So here we are at 10:30 p.m. on the 29th of October 1966. And this is a Black 5 from Perth Shed bringing a northbound parcels train. 44879 is the number. And the parcel train is just leaving Stirling station for Perth.
Thank you.
the Black Five heads out of Stirling there in October 1966. What have you got next for us, Mike?
Well, this one's a Britannia, class 70051, Firth of Forth, and it's on a passenger train that left Carlisle at 8.30 in the evening and got to Stirling at about quarter to midnight. Well, the Britannia made a beautiful noise, lovely bark as it went away, and this chime whistle is quite unique to the Britannia class.
Yes, worth waiting up for there. Quarter to midnight at night, was it?
It was, and it probably woke a few people in Stirling at that time of night.
OK, what's the next one we've got?
Well, we've got a B1 and a goods train passing Cooper and Fife.
Right, let's hear that.
Well, it was 11.38 at night, 1st of November 1966, and we had a loose-coupled goods train, 61263 B1460, hauling it, and it's travelling from Dundee to Thornton.
Thanks very much indeed. Well, with that particular recording, we finish our visit to your steam archives this time round. We look forward to our next visit. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Those sounds are the sounds of my childhood in Perth, when the well-nigh incredible number of 5,000 Perth residents worked for the railway industry in a multitude of different capacities. Yes, I remember when 5,000 people in Perth worked for the railway industry. And you'll remember these.
OK, so the signal is now clear, so we're just going to give the signal to the rear driver. Make sure it's clear. Now to the front. The driver's given us the right to way and we're now safe to proceed.
What's happening is that a passenger train is being worked out of Bowness, top and tailed by two locomotives. Former London and North Eastern Railway class D49 Murrayshire is at the head of the train, with an English Electric Type 3, later known as a Class 37, at the rear. The guard must signal to both drivers, thus there are two blasts on his whistle. Murrayshire is the sole survivor of a class of 76 powerful 4-furrow locomotives designed by Sir Nigel Gresley and built at Darlington between 1927 and 1935. Scottish businessman Ian Fraser, a one-time apprentice at Darlington, purchased the engine when it was withdrawn in 1962, had it comprehensively overhauled and donated it to the Royal Scottish Museum in Edinburgh, who have generously loaned the locomotive to the society. The large-scale replacement of steam locomotives by diesel electrics began in earnest in British Railways' modernisation plan of 1955. D6725, the loco you could hear, is a 1730 horsepower Coco diesel electric locomotive, which runs on 2 3-axle bogies, the outer axle on each bogie being powered. It was outshipped by the English Electric Company in 1961 and fell into British Railways' general classification of Type 3, being between 1500 and 2000 horsepower.
A reclassification of the diesel fleet resulted in the locomotive becoming one of the 308 members of Class 37, as 37025.
And that pretty well wraps up this first edition of Sound Blast. The next edition is planned for December, in nice time for Christmas. In the meanwhile, you can contact us online at soundblast, all one word with an initial capital, soundblast@srps.org.uk. Or you can write to us at soundblast, two words this time, soundblast, SRPS, Union Street, Bowness, West Lothian, EH519AQ, Scotland. The producer, tireless roving reporter and editor has been David Bytheway, and I'm Sandy Simpson, wishing you, wherever you are, all that you wish yourself from the Scottish Railway Preservation Society at Bowness in Bonnie, Scotland.